In a world full of turmoil, there's a lot of people that sit back and go, wait a second, what is it that I should really be focusing on? What should I be developing so that I don't get caught up in the chaos, but I actually thrive in any environment, in any situation? That's what we're going to be talking about in today's Speaking Get What You Want podcast with the great Nick Luisi. Nick, how are you, my friend?
Well, it's wonderful to see you, my dear friend. I'm doing wonderful. I love the fact that now I've got a new pronoun, which is great, in front of Nick Luisi. So I'm going to be sure to use that. Thank you for all that you do for entrepreneurs and speakers and just letting people kind of tell their story. You are the master at that. So I'm excited for the next 20 plus minutes.
Oh, well, you know what, Nick? I love what you're talking about. I love what your mission is. And we talked about before we hopped on about the world that we currently live in. You know, there's a lot of people that are unsettled. There's a lot of people that are worried about the economy, but you're convinced and you believe that if people will work on their ability to sell, that is something that's never going to go away. Why do you feel that way?
Well, it's been since the dawn of time, right? Since, you know, we've been moving goods, we've been trading goods and services since the dawn of time. And it's you got to get better. When constraints happen, which we were talking about this, we're filming this in May, but there's going to be some constraints coming. You have to be better at selling, not just to your cheerleader if you sell B2B inside of an organization, but you have to sell to the economic buyer. And you're going to have to kind of talk to a number of different personality types. And so if you just sell one way, right, I got a hammer, everything's a nail, you're never going to move product or services. So you have to use your entire toolbox. And the smart companies, the ones we deal with today and other cutting edge ones, are retooling their sales process because they realize it's almost going to be a different, you know, it's going to be a different playbook. 3 months from now, 6 months from now, a year from now, it's going to be a much different playbook. So obviously utilizing AI, we'd be silly if we didn't talk about that. It's a phenomenal prospecting tool. It's a phenomenal tool to keep you in line, right, with projects and tasks. Utilizing that to do really good discovery so you're not just asking the same questions as you would to everybody. You have a really good profile of your ICP, ideal customer profile, avatar, whatever phraseology you use. So using the tools that you have to really sell well, but also do really good discovery, to then build different case studies for the champion, for the economic buyer, for the end user, all that. If you sell in the consumer marketplace, money's going to tighten up a little bit, right? That's just going to happen right now. People are living on credit. That will dry up a little bit. So you're really going to have to really deliver your value proposition, something that you teach, Chad, right? Just having people are being able to articulate why they need to do this project, why they need to buy this product or service now, and what's the benefits of going with them, right? The race to the bottom of being the cheapest provider, no one ever wins that. So we don't want to be that in the marketplace. But the marketplace is, you know, we're going to be dusting off unfortunately, the 2020 playbook, the 1993 playbook, the 1997 playbook. So it's going to be turbulent times. So we're out there talking about it so people don't get blindsided, because they think they're going to get blindsided if they're not paying attention.
Okay. Now, Nick, I certainly don't want to date you here, but you've had the opportunity and privilege to be in sales for quite some time.
Yep.
So, and you've always been on the cutting edge of sales and persuasion, sure, and getting people to take action. What do you see the biggest difference? Do you think people are becoming more effective at persuasion and sales over the last 30 years, or are they becoming less effective?
Great question. So, and thank you for not dating me. I think that the cream always rises to the top. Right. And I'm not going to say that it's generational, because I see some young sellers, some people that maybe don't have as much gray as I do in their beards, are really, really good. Right. And they're really good on using technology and that type of thing. They may be afraid of this, the phone, and they're going to have to utilize different tools. But I think they have a really good knack of understanding how to bond with people, how to build rapport with people, how to really provide value. And in a world of uncertainty, it's all about trust, right? So how do you build trust in the marketplace for the exchange of goods? So there is a lot of really bad sellers. If you think about it, in general, sales has got about a 30 to 35% turnover, right? A lot of that happens within the first 90 days. It's got the most turnover there is from a skilled labor perspective, right? That needs to be fixed. Some of it is companies bring the wrong people. Not that they're wrong salespeople. It's just the wrong type of personality or wrong type of salesperson for their sales process. Two is you get people that maybe were with big brands and they're used to selling for the Googles of the world, the Salesforces of the world, and now they go to a startup, right? And that's a much different sell, right? You have to be crafty. You don't have the utilization. You know that as you were on the life cycle of Infusionsoft, now Keep, right? When you were beginning, that was a different sale than when you guys became the 800-pound gorilla. So, you know, it just depends on where the company is in the life cycle and where the salesperson's skill is in the life cycle. And hopefully they cross each other. X equals, you know, crosses Y, and it's at the right time. But a lot of times you bring the wrong type of salespeople in at the wrong time. And therefore, you set them up for failure. We see that a lot with organizations.
But you say that, okay, a couple of things you said there that I want to elaborate on. The one thing you did say is the key to sales, the key to persuasion, the key to getting anyone to take action is trust. Now, studies there, Nick, there are a lot of studies out there that say trust is deteriorating in society. You know what I mean? 100%. We look just at the political landscape, right? There's a mass movement towards an independent party because no one believes what the Democrats say. No one believes what the Republicans say, right? So no one, that this trust is deteriorating. And so how does somebody who says, I want to be better at sales, I want to be more effective at helping persuade people, how do they combat the deterioration of trust that may have nothing to do with them, but just a society in a whole?
Well, if you think about it, historically, not only do we have this from a macro perspective, but a micro perspective. So let's bring it down to sales. Historically, the sales profession, the sales role is a very low trust environment, right? Yeah. We've all had that. If once I say salesperson to your audience, they have a certain picture in their mind that's usually not flattering, right? Some of that's from interactions that we've had. Some of that is we've caused that as a profession, but some of that is just, you know, just the nature. So I think you know, there's a number of levers that you need to pull, right, from a trust perspective. The first one is, you know, showing up and doing what you said you're going to do, right? Showing up and doing what you're supposed to do, doing really good discovery questions. So the person says, this person gets me, this person understands my problem. If it's a business, doing good research. So you're not asking really high level people around the table simple questions that you could have done. And salespeople are inherently lazy. I'm pointing, I got four going back at me, but you know, they don't do that work. So showing up like you should, right? Showing up with an agenda, right? So you know, when you people go to a lawyer, they expect a certain process. So mirror that professional process. That's the first thing. The second thing is when you have to realize you're selling to a bunch of different people. So communicate in such a way to those different people in the way that they want to be communicated with. The third thing, and we've always taught this and you're a master at this, is really using third-party stories and third-party testimonials to reinforce what you're saying, but also reinforce your case study, right? So you need the CFO testimonials so that when you're selling to the CFO or the economic buyer, if you will, it's the same language. And we don't spend enough time with that. And when we peel back the onion on testimonials, they're very motherhood and apple pie, if you will. Oh, they're great. You know, they're friendly. You know, that doesn't move the needle. So you really need a different playbook and you got to create all this stuff. And are you diagnosing before you're prescribing, right? A lot of times we run around with a solution and therefore we think everything is the problem that our solution solves. So how do you go about that? So those are just some really like five high level things that people could do. We could go deeper.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Well, I just want to start with the first thing you said there is show up, right? Yeah. And I tell my children that are getting older and in the workforce, I tell them all the time, like never before in the history of the world has it been easier to differentiate yourself from everybody else. Because if you just show up.
Amen.
That's, I mean, but what you're saying is it taking it to a whole new level. Not only do you show up, but you show up the way you should show up, depending on the circumstance or who you're meeting with.
Yeah, and taking personal responsibility. I think trust comes from taking personal responsibility. In the process, in problems that arise, in saying, no, we don't do that, and here's why we don't do that, that's how you gain a level of trust. Salespeople historically want to say yes to everything, and therefore we overextend ourselves and make promises that we can't deliver on, and therefore things blow up. So realizing that and having the intestinal fortitude to realize that it's okay to say, no, we don't do that, or most importantly, and I just read this study, I'm sure you saw it too, which is, more respect for the person says, no, I don't know the answer to that, love, but let me find out. Mm. And then find out and send it to them, right? But a lot of times we feel like we have to blunder our way through things and just kind of obtusely answer things to people. And people are used to being snowed, right? We are, and AI is going to make it worse, right? So our level of trust of anything that you talked about, right? We don't trust the politics. The AI, you know, is this a real or is it an AI? You know, just everything is murky. So just showing up A, human, and B, as you should, and doing what you're supposed to do in the process is going to be able to differentiate.
Oh, huge, huge. And you said something there that I think is really powerful. You said trust comes from taking personal responsibility, right? Yeah, I mean, that's powerful because anytime, even when I think of our children, Nick, when they've ever taken personal responsibility for something, my trust immediately shoots up with them. And you think about how people asking themselves, people listening, going, how do I be quicker at building that trust? Trust comes from taking that personal responsibility. It's just a powerful statement.
Yeah. Yep. And I think, you know, we've gotten away from that. And I applaud, you know, that some colleges are trying to instill that in people, right? And some, you know, certainly families or organizations, if you will, are trying to instill that personal fortitude, if you will, and that this showing up and taking responsibility. And I think we've allowed people to misbehave and not take that responsibility. And we as a society owe ourselves that to say no more, you know, no, this isn't it.
Yeah. We own that, you know, we take that responsibility. That's powerful. Okay. Another thing you said too, though, was the importance of asking questions and now the key to me, and I'd love your take on this, Nick, is in asking questions, equally important is actually listening to the person's response.
I think that is the secret sauce that nobody does enough, right? It's we listen to respond, right? That's an analogy, right? Versus really intuitively listening. And I think, you know, just instilling that, one of my favorite books is just, you know, Just Listen, right? And it's teaching salespeople how to actively listen in the engagement, but really, you know, asking the question and then taking a step back and listening. And I think we in the sales profession are the worst at that, where we're waiting, right? We want to just show our knowledge. Some of it's insecurity. Mm-hmm. Some of it's a lot of different things. But I agree with you. It's the act of listening and asking the intelligent questions, right? And when you hear, oh, that's a good question, right? Much like how you do as a podcast host or as a coach, you got to ask what, you know, the 6 degrees questions, right? Peel back that onion. And we think that surface question is okay. There's a really, really smart duo. They're from the UK, and they've got a sales agency. And I think, you know, it's We Have a Meeting. Wham is that. But they said the one thing that most sellers don't do, and you hit it on the head, is they just aren't actively engaged in the conversation. And I myself find that it's easy to get distracted. Before you and I got on this, I shut down Slack. I shut down my phones. You know, I got three different phone systems. I shut down email because all that stuff pinging, right, will distract you. You can't help that. It's just human nature. And I do have to deal with that sometimes when we are managing sales forces is there is a propensity of adult ADD, right? Sure. Maybe it's underdiagnosed or undiagnosed or not addressed. And so now that adult in that's the work, the profession, he or she can't stay focused, right? And so you got to say, let's put those blinders on, and this is what you have to do at this time. So you almost feel like you're becoming rudimentary, but it's almost what you have to do. But you have to teach them to actively engage and actively listen. I agree with that, Chad.
So well, and I don't care if it, one thing that everyone needs to understand is everybody, regardless of what you do, you are in the business of sales. You correct. Are in the business of sales. And so if you're a dentist, if you're an attorney, whatever it is you might be, you have to be actively listening to those questions. I mean, some would say you don't have to, but the reality is if you want to be extremely successful at what you do, actively listening is powerful.
Don't you find too, because you do so much work with different companies, is I think a lot of breakdowns in organizations is just communication breakdown.
No question.
You know, and some of it is I want to communicate verbally and you want to communicate via writing, right? And so you just send me Slack messages all day, but I want to have a conversation with you. And you're like, well, this could have just in the back of your mind, you didn't need a meeting. This could have just been an email, right? So there's a lot of one is we have to understand what other people's communication style is, but we just don't actively communicate or actively listen. Well, that happens in our organizations. It happens in our families, right. Unfortunately. Right. But it also happens in the sales environment. And I agree. Everybody's in sales, right? You go back to you've dated me already. So I could quote Earl Nightingale, but right. Earl Nightingale would say we're all in sales. And, you know, if you don't know who that is, Google him. But, you know, it was, you know, from day one, the teachers in sales. Right. If you're doing mission work, which I think is great, you know, you have a history of that and just. It teaches people to really get outside their comfort zone. But, you know, when you're talking to people, you have to be actively engaged. So I think, you know, that's step one.
Well, no question. Now, let me ask you this. So, Nick, sure. Why do you think people shy away? You already established from the onset, you said there's going to be great demand for great salespeople, right? Yeah, so why do people sometimes shy away from the industry when salespeople are the highest paid people? They sure. People want great salespeople. Why do some people shy away from it?
For all the reasons that you've brought up on this podcast. One is they have a bad attitude. Maybe they had a bad sales experience, and so therefore that has painted tainted the picture of them. Maybe their parents have. If they don't have a parent that has come from commerce, right, or sales, or maybe entrepreneurship or small business, they don't have the appreciation for that. Historically, we've always pushed the children to go into the let's call it the high professions or high perceived professions, the doctors, the lawyers of the world, the accountants of the world. I think a lot of that is certainly is going to be diminished demand, right, with AI. So you have to kind of figure out where the right thing is. Some colleges are doing it, right? It's growing, but there's not a lot of sales courses in the business school, if you will, or even a degree in sales where you get a degree in marketing or business administration or computer sciences. There's probably about 50 programs, 50 universities that have a really well thought out, well curriculumed sales division. And some of those guys, Dr. Harry Dover in Texas has got a great program. Ball State's been one of the more famous ones, right? Some of these programs, these kids are coming out at higher salaries because they come out of these programs than the people that go into consulting, right? So the base, I think last year for the ones that come out of the MARC programs is 120,000 base salary, 130,000 base salary plus commissions and bonuses on top of that, right? But these kids are so well trained and they view it as a profession. So I think you have to start in the schools, right? You have to start with, you know, having good salespeople out there so people can mirror and match them, right? And we probably need to be better at mentoring, and we're not doing a good job of that anymore because we've cut so many of the sales management roles or sales mentor roles.
Right, right. But people that do take the time to get effective at sales, I mean, yeah. I think about, you know, what you're doing and what you're teaching, that can change the trajectory of somebody's life if they just get good at that.
You're so spot on. And, you know, you've been around sales teams your entire career. And one is just realizing it's a profession. You and I grew up that it was a profession, right? So we trained on it. We studied it. I always joke, these are the boring books behind me. They're the sales and marketing books. Back in the day when we were in field sales, which is where I started, right? We drove and listened to the Zig Ziglars on tape or the Tommy Hopkins on tape and it evolved from that. And then we started to get into it. So I think you have to take it as a profession, right? We wouldn't go to a dentist or a doctor that hasn't done his CMEs, right? Every year. We wouldn't go to a lawyer that isn't staying up on the profession. So why do we expect salespeople that haven't enhanced their skills in the last 20 years to be at the top of the game? They're not going to be.
Well, and I just think that as you're talking, Nick, if an attorney went to, in your website, salesperformanceteam.com, an attorney spent some time honing down their sales skills, if a dentist spent some time honing down their sales skills, it would massively impact every area of their life. And so,
it's funny. So we do have clients that are in the legal profession. We have three law firms that work with us, and we work with their attorneys, right? And it's a different sales process for sure. But we have to get them outside their comfort zone of asking for money and those type of things. But they're wonderful to work with. They're great. They're great students. And they all, I agree with you. We don't do enough of it. But those that we work with, we do enjoy, and they do end up being successful.
Well, the reality is, Nick, nothing in business happens till something gets sold.
Amen.
We can sit around and talk about business, we can talk about the success we're going to have, we can do all of those things, but until something gets sold, then we're really just talking about
that plaque, which you may not be able to see, says it on my bookshelf, right? And it's you've dated me, right? But it's old and dated, right? So I made it in the 90s when I first started, because I heard that. I don't know if it was, everybody says that it was Mary Kay or maybe Henry Ford, or somebody says it, but nothing happens till something gets sold. I heard from either Ken Griffin or Bill Ackerman, both who are hedge funds guys. There was an interview. I don't know which one it is, so please keep me honest. If you listen to it, go look for both of them. I think it was Bill Ackerman or Ken Griffin. He said his partner, when they first started the hedge fund, had one phrase. And he said, if we want to eat, we have to sell. And he had it on like a little plastic thing. And then when his partner retired, Ken said, that's what I want, right? So we have to go out. And if you want to eat, somebody's got to sell. And everybody wants to eat. We can't just kind of sit around and wait for inbound, to happen, because it's not going to happen. So you have to aggressively go out there and sell.
Well, I honestly say all the time, sales is, and I know people love saying sales is a numbers game, but the reality is, Nick, if you're terrible at sales with these 10 people, then multiplying it by 10 doesn't make you better.
You're just gonna
if you're terrible 10 times, I gotta be terrible 100, And that's that's why I love what you're doing at salesperformanceteam.com, because people can get better at what they do. And so they can achieve the level of success that they were hoping for.
Yeah. And I agree with that. And I'm going to steal that line. I'll give you the footnote, but, if you're bad at what you do, it doesn't matter how many people you do it to. It's just going to be worse and worse and worse.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Wow. Nick, absolutely love what you share. People can go find you at selfperformanceteam.com or yoursalesrecruiter.com.
Yep, both are great. That's how they find us. And I want to thank you because I work with a lot of founder-led companies. I know that's kind of who you work with in your sweet spot. And you teaching them to fix the communication that we've talked about, I think is so important. And that happens a lot in family-run businesses or founder-led businesses because they have it in their mind, something, and they don't articulate it. So the work you do and your firm does and your team is so important. And really, if you think about the wealth of our society, certainly we all talk about Wall Street, but it's really Main Street, absolutely, right? It's really those founder-led businesses, the roofers, the construction people, all those type of things. And the work you do with them is so important. And thank you for that, first off.
Absolutely. Well, Nick, it was great being with you. Always love your insights. We'll have to do it again.
I will love it. Thank you, Chad.
Take care. Bye now.
Bye.